I think taking ownership of who you are allows you to build your confidence. It allows you to step into your power.
This is the Own It Show, where we tell stories of how everyday people made ownership theirs.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Own It Show. I'm your host, Justin.
And I'm Elise. Welcome to the show.
And if you've been following on the last couple weeks, we've really been leaning heavily into these mindset shifts that can occur and how things in our life often happen for us and not to us. And I know that's like this old cliche saying that, everything can happen for you and it's not happening to you and just deal with it and just keep moving on. But truly, when you absorb that mindset, when you lean into that area of your life and you truly own that concept, your life can transform and your life can ultimately be transcended into something that you didn't even understand was available to you. But yet at the end of the day, whatever that we can perceive, whatever we can dream up, it's not only available to you, but it is more likely to happen than not. And that is the scary part about it, is we just have to take that first step and lean in. And today's guest has a story that is going to change the way that you guys think, is going to change the way that you truly absorb information and understand that things happen truly for you in this life. And the way that we handle them is ultimately what determines the results in which we get. And so, Amberlee, it is such a pleasure to have you on the Own It Show. And thank you so much for spending time to really pour into our audience.
Oh, Justin, Elise, you guys, thank you so much for having me. I love your show and I just feel honored to be here. So thank you.
Amberlee, I want you to kind of dive in a little bit because listeners, if you guys haven't gone to her website, if you haven't gone to her Instagram, if you're not following her on social, if you're not following her podcast, The True Grit and Grace Show, you have to start seeing some of her content because she is so authentic and leans into these concepts in such a deep way and provides such a great mindset shift for you. But she also embodies it in her story. And that story is ultimately what has allowed her to then connect and relate to people in a deep, deep way to ultimately transfer her experience to people without them having to go through it as well and know that it's available to them. So Amberlee, with knowing that, with everybody kind of taking a look at what you have, from the speaking work that you do, to the workshops that you do, to the mastermind that you do, to the books you produce, to the podcast that you have, to your time in the media and the press and everything else that you're involved in, which is, it's mind-boggling. You're everywhere. It wasn't always like that. That wasn't always the life that you were living and that you were, and the hand that you were dealt, but rather that was what you chose to do with that. And so I'd love us to go back to, life pre-event, and I'll get to that in a second, and then life post-event.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. What a great question. And I know first of all, my intention is to really share everything that I've learned along the way. I think pain has been probably my biggest teacher, along with a lot of failures. And so sometimes when, you know, I hear you say, oh, the media, the press, the speaking, the book, the podcast, anybody that's listening right now, I will just let you know, 6 years ago, well, almost six, not even quite 6 years ago, I didn't even own a computer. I was $2.9 million into medical debt. We had a lien on our house. I was in a real hopeless situation. I had this successful business in the fitness industry. I had a company. I employed several trainers. I used to teach. I had a trainer certification preparation course where I helped trainers get certified, doing fitness videos sponsored by Nike. And had a success in the health and wellness business for years. And it all changed when I had this horrific accident. And so when I heard you say, you know, sometimes it's hard to imagine that things are happening for us, I was in a place where I had that victim mentality where, like, how did a good girl like me end up here drinking every day? I had survived this near-death accident, 34 surgeries to save my leg from amputation, then had this nerve disease called complex regional pain syndrome I was diagnosed with, which there's supposedly no known cure, and was trying all these different medications. None of them were working. None of the procedures were working. I was on 73 homeopathic pills a day, along with 11 prescription medications. When nothing was working, I was like, well, screw it. I'm just going to drink. And that seemed to not only numb the physical pain, the nerve pain a bit, but it also helped me stuff down the feelings of feeling worthless, of feeling broken, of all the shame, of all the hate that I had for myself and the way that I looked and how mad I was at my body, that my leg didn't work properly, that it was giving me so much pain. And it wasn't until I took full ownership of where I was in my life and like, okay, well, these are the cards I've been dealt. It's up to me to make the best of my life. Was I able to take radical accountability, have awareness for where I was, and start to take action steps to make my life the best that it could be? And I think that you can have challenges and you can have some pain. I mean, we all have pain, whether it's physical or emotional, but we can also choose to build upon the joy. And, you know, I was told by a doctor when I was diagnosed with this disease that I would never walk again, that I'd be wheelchair bound forever, that I would never work again. And I was like, you know, that's just not the vision that I have for me. Like, there's nothing wrong with being in a wheelchair. My little brother's been in a wheelchair his whole life, but that's just not the vision I had for myself. I wanted to get back to working out. I wanted to be able to chase after my kids. And so it wasn't until I really started taking a look at the things that I was doing that were not working for me, the bad habits that I could change. And one day at a time, one step at a time, got sober, decided I wanted to write a book to share my experience so I could turn some pain into purpose and hopefully inspire and empower other people to climb out of the darkness, to get up again, and really chose to build upon my grit, really lean into that. Did my life start to get better? And so I think that when we do choose to take a good, hard look at our life and ourselves, which isn't always so easy, that we can decide that we want to have a better life, but it's ultimately up to us to make that decision to decide. And then every day do one thing, even if it's one small step forward or in the right direction to make our lives better. So I just wanted to share that because I want people to know that, you know, sometimes when you look on social media, it all looks glamorous or it's a highlight reel or it looks easy. And, you know, I'm still learning as I go and I love to learn, but I've dove into self-development and had therapy and hours of excruciating physical therapy too. And then I had a strong enough why I wanted to make my life better. My kids were a big inspiration for that. And I think that when you start asking yourself the right questions, like, it gets you out of that victim mentality. And so instead of saying, why is this happening to me? I'm like, well, why do I choose to move forward? And I thought, well, it's because I want to be an example of resilience for my children and for others. And little by little, I've been able to get back up again, learn from failures. And now it's amazing to me sometimes that I'm like, oh my gosh, we're on a podcast. We're connecting on Zoom when I didn't own a computer 5 years ago.
First off, Amberly, thank you so much for sharing part of your story with us, because it is such an inspirational one. And there's so many people in their lives who go through tragedy or setbacks who fully succumb to that, and it swallows them whole and it becomes a part of their identity and who they are. But you didn't let that happen to you. And you talked about this moment where you made a decision. Mm-hmm. It was a mental decision that you made to take ownership of your life and to change your circumstances. Tell us about that moment. Can you dive into that more and talk about how you really decided to do a complete 180 and what you wanted your life to look like?
Well, I had help with that because sometimes I think we can get in our own way, you know, and I was so stubborn and I was so set on, I wanted my life the way it was. I kept trying to go back to what I was doing, which closed me off from all these opportunities that you know, could were possible for me. And I could not get out of pain. And so I had this big idea. I was like, I'm going to go to the doctor and just tell him he needs to amputate my leg. And so I went into Dr. Wiss and I said, hey, I appreciate you doing all the 34 surgeries to save my leg. I was like, but this is, it's, I'm in too much pain. I need you to go ahead and amputate so I can just get back to what I was doing. I want my life back. And he did something that completely changed everything for me. And I think that sometimes we need others to help shift our perspective and also others to believe in us when we don't believe in ourselves and to love us until we can love ourselves. I needed all of that. And so he sat in front of me and he took my leg and he put it in his lap. And usually, you know, they'll put your leg on the table or examine you, like lay on the table. And he just sat in front of me and put my deformed, scarred up, a leg that I called disgusting, ugly, put it in his lap. And my first thought was, wow, I can't believe he's putting my leg on his nice white coat. And he looked at it like it was a masterpiece. And he said, well, we can't amputate this because it could caused the CRPS to get worse. It could even actually make it spread. But when he looked at it like it was a masterpiece, I just like welled up with tears. And I thought, wow, if he can look at my leg like that, maybe I can learn to look at it that way too. And it was the first moment, the first shift that I had of, well, these are the cards I've been dealt. There's amputation is not a solution. It's up to me to play the hell out of these cards. And so from that day on, I just started to try, be willing to try. I was just willing to look at things differently. And I started practicing gratitude. And instead of looking down at my leg as ugly and disgusting, I would look down and go, oh my goodness, it's amazing how the human spirit is so powerful and how the body can heal. And I was grateful that my leg allowed me to stand on my own two feet and that I had my leg and that it didn't have any infections and I was healing the way I, and I started to be just so grateful. And it started to allow me to accept where I was. And it was like a kick in the gut when I was like, okay, I guess this nerve disease isn't curable. But then it did something for me. I thought, well, this is it. But what else can I do? How can I build upon my joy? And that's when I started to really work on my mindset. I started really focusing on optimal health. And, you know, before we started recording, I was like, oh, yeah, right here on my desk. I've got the saliva hormone test kit. I've got the test tubes to take blood. And it's like, what can I do every single day to improve my mental state, my emotional state, my health? And I think it's not just one thing that we have to improve upon. It is everything from mind, body, and spirit. And so every day I started a morning, I like to call ritual, not routine. Routine's kind of mundane. I'm kind of boring. And so I think a ritual time to myself where I set my intention for the day. I practice gratitude. I have a group of ladies. I just got off of a Zoom call with one of them. We call each other the God Squad. And we send each other our gratitude list every day, which helps us stay accountable to stay in that mindset of gratitude. And it's one thing to practice gratitude, but when you can share it, when you can see what other people are grateful for, it also shifts your perspective. I read out of either a self-development book or a spiritual book, and I move my body because it moves my mood. Today, I only had 20 minutes, and I could have been like, oh, I only have 20 minutes. I'm going to skip my workout. And I was like, no, 20 minutes is better than nothing. I'm going to get in the gym and I'm going to kill it. I'm going to superset everything. The moment I got in the gym, I didn't feel like it. I wasn't motivated to do it, but I thought about why I needed to do it. And it's because it moves my mood. It releases endorphins that combat pain. I'm a nicer mom and wife when I work out. It relieves anxiety. It helps me to not be depressed. And so all these things might seem like a lot to shift your perspective or make your life better, but I tried it the other way and it didn't work. So all these things I do to help me stay in a positive mindset to help me stay healthy is a heck of a lot better than a life of misery. So that's why I do all these things.
No, it's exactly right. And I think you mentioned something, you mentioned a couple of things there. It's this thought process of routine. And if you look at the deep behavioral science of routines, you're like, they're very mundane. They're tough to get into. And people are always like, I need to start a new routine. Well, they don't realize that when you're actually trying to create behavior change, routine exists at the bottom floor. It's routine, rhythm, ritual, instinct. And so there's actually four levels in creating new behavior change and behavior habits.
I didn't know that. Say that again. It's
routine, rhythm, ritual.
Ritual and instinct.
Yeah. So it starts as a routine, right? We want to start something new. We want to get into something. We want to add it to whatever it is that we're engaging in our lifestyle. From there, we start to get into a rhythm. It starts to, I'm getting this. I'm getting the hang of this. I'm able to adjust. I'm able to go and fly somewhere, and I'm still able to keep that rhythm or that routine going. So that's stage two. Ritual is what you're talking about now. It's something you look forward to. It's something you're able to, you don't have to be motivated to go do it, but it's a ritual that engages your life. And then four is it becomes instinct. It's something that you can't do. And if you do skip it that day, it's not going to completely leave your system. It's not something that's going to fall off once and then fall off for 5 weeks. It'll fall off once and you get back on the horse the next day with whatever it may be. We think about instincts that we have in our life, brushing our teeth or taking a shower after we work out or whatever it may be. It's just instinctual. We don't have to be told to do it. And so everything, every behavior that we have goes through those same four stages.
I love that.
In which we can get there.
I love that. And you know what? In program, so I'm in a 12-step program and we talk about having like smart feet. So we don't even think about like I get up in the morning and I know right away I'm going to go drink my bottle of water with my gut health supplement. I put on my gym clothes because I know I'm going to go work out at either in the morning or sometime during the day. And so it's just instinctual that, yeah, I'm going to do these things. And, you know, I've been traveling a lot. I just got back from a couple of trips. And the first thing I do is like, okay, where's the gym at the hotel? Like I take all my supplements with me. I know even if it's a day that I'm speaking on stage, I know that if I go work out before, I'm going to be more energized. And I'm probably going to meet people that I'm supposed to meet by just divine connection. I don't know, in the gym. That happened this last time that I was speaking at an event. I met two people that it was like, oh my gosh, I've always wanted to meet you. Well, they have instinctually, they're like, I'm going to go work out. They've got these healthy habits set in place. So I think when you're in alignment like that, you also meet the right people.
Totally. 100%. It goes back to what I've got written right here is it connects you to the purpose. And so often we hear about these routines or morning routines or habits that we should engage in, but they just turn into a laundry list. They turn into this checklist. They're like, oh, well, person A does this, so I have to do this. And it's something that all of a sudden we feel obligated to do, not because it's something that connects us to that deeper purpose. It connects us to God. It connects us to that center that holds us tight, that clears our mind, that puts us in the right places at the right time. But rather we're just checking this checklist off. And it's like, oh my gosh, I've got to go to the gym. Oh my gosh, I've got to drink this. Oh my gosh, I've got to do this meditation, this journaling, this. It turns literally into this putrid laundry list of things that don't mean anything to us. And that's why they don't become sustainable. But when we do something that truly connects us to that deep inner calling, connects us to God, and allows us to have a clear mind, that's when everything happens for us. That's when everything starts creating and starts moving in a unique way that, quite frankly, is supernatural in that way. And I think that is a really unique and divine place here that I think our listeners can like really attest to and latch onto. Now, there are scientific principles about what you were talking about. When you train, when you work out, there's an increase in dopamine and serotonin. Dopamine is that reward drug that you start feeling really good with, and serotonin is that happy drug that you start feeling really amazing with. And there's leftover residual effects of that. So when you're going on stage, you're feeling you're good in groups and all of these types of things. And so that makes sense, but there's a deeper spiritual component to making sure that you're in alignment and connection with what that calling is. And there's ways in which we can actually manufacture that.
Yeah. And you know what? I love everything you just shared. And I think that it has to be connected. It, like, I can sit here and tell you what my morning ritual is, but you have to do what's right for you. And I think what has helped me with that is I have my non-negotiables, because I know when I don't do certain things, I don't feel in alignment. So when I don't work out, and actually I feel closest to God when I am on a hike out in nature, I just feel more connected to my heart, my spirit, my higher power. But also when I'm working out, I know what it does for me mentally. And the main reason I work out is not because I'm like, oh, I want bigger biceps. Like, yeah, that would be nice. But I do it because how it makes me feel. And so I think it's important to really pay attention to what is working for you, what makes you feel better mentally, spiritually, physically, and stick to those things. Like, I didn't get to work out for 2 days. It was just like, I got back in town and it was been back to back with Zoom sessions. And last night I could tell I was not as nice driving through traffic, you know? And I'm like, okay, I notice I'm a nicer person if I just take time to do the things that I know are going to fill my heart and soul and make me feel better and take that anxiety away.
Totally. I want to dive back a little bit into something you talked about before. And for a lot of our listeners, and I heard this quote, Dane Cook, believe it or not, was talking about this. He's come back with vengeance in his career, and he's really taken his comedy to a place of self-development and self-reflection of like where he was and where he's come from and everything that he's gone through. And he said, when you hit rock bottom, so many of us are like, oh, we're at the bottom now. I've got to get out of here. Like, I got to move. I got to take off. But he's like, if you hit rock bottom, and you look around and you can appreciate where you are and you can appreciate how terrible things are and learn something while you're down there, that rock bottom never has to come back again. And so many times we bounce from rock bottom to a little bit higher and back to rock bottom and a little bit higher and back to rock bottom and a little bit higher. And I'd love to kind of know, in your experience through this, where was your rock bottom and how were you able to catapult yourself to the moment of action that ultimately started to yield the results that you were looking for?
Such a good question. My rock bottom, a lot of people might think, would have been when I got hit by this SUV while riding my motorcycle and I was in the hospital, not knowing whether or not they were going to amputate my leg or not. That was not my rock bottom. My rock bottom was, I got out, I was recovering, I was pushing hard, I was all about the grit, just like push through the pain, stuff down the pain. I was so out of touch with the signals that the pain was trying to tell me. And I had this back pain, and I remember going to the gym and asking one of the other trainers, I was like, hey, do you have some Bengay I can put on my back so I can work out? And I remember thinking, well, I'm kind of glad my back hurts because it's making my leg feel better and I don't have to walk with a limp. That's how bad my back was hurting. The next day I was on my way to go give a motivational talk, and I was feeling worse. I was feeling like death. My back hurt really bad. Later that night I got home and I was like, I think I need to make an appointment with the doctor. The next morning I was going to go to the doctor, and I started convulsing uncontrollably, shaking, and I had to call for my husband, and he called a family friend that was a doctor, and he said, I think she's gone septic. You need to get her to the ER right away. I go to the ER and I told the ER guy, I said, hey, I might have a kidney infection. My back has been hurting. I said, he comes back. They took blood, took urine. That comes back, and he crossed his arms and he goes, oh my gosh, you don't look like you should be here. He goes, you look healthy. He goes, but you're septic. he said, I've got to put you in ICU. And I was like, I don't want to go to ICU. And the nurse goes, well, why? And I said, I won't be able to see my kids. And they said, you're going to die if we don't get you in right now. So they admitted me into the hospital right then and there. Then the rest was kind of fuzzy. I was in ICU for 3 days and I had two different doctors that came in and said, if you would have waited one more day, you would have been dead. I was to the point where I was trying to stuff down the pain so much. I was drinking every day to try to just self-medicate. My liver enzymes were elevated 300 times the level that they should have been. My kidneys were failing. And I thought, I survived this horrific accident only to slowly be killing myself with alcohol. And it was in that moment where I, when we talk about rock bottom, I wanted to die, but I was too afraid. And in that moment, I thought, I have got to get through this for my daughters. And I got on my knees and I prayed. I just needed help. That prayer gave me the strength to reach out for help. And I struggled. I didn't want people to know that I was in so much pain. I was almost like living a double life because I was trying to be brave and I was trying to just do my best. But the pain was so tremendous that I was drinking every day and asking for help. Oh my gosh, that took so much courage because I actually went to a former client who I knew was sober. And she goes, I'm going to help you. I'm going to take you to a meeting. Well, a week went by and I never heard from her. And I thought, I'm going to die if I don't get help now. And so I literally started Googling 12-step programs, didn't know what to do. I found a meeting that was in between when I dropped my daughter off for school and when my husband went to work, and walking into that meeting was like one of the scariest things I've done. I had so much shame. But when I was in that room, I heard hope and I heard women share a message that made me feel like, oh my gosh, they understand me. They understand my pain. They've overcome this. If they've done it, I can do it too. And I just kept going back and I was just willing to try. And so I think that if anything out of anything I've shared today, the most important thing was to any transformation is to start with radical acceptance for what's going on in your life and then asking for help. Because, you know, you might think, oh, well, they don't understand what I'm going through, but I guarantee you, there's somebody out there going through something similar. So I would say any kind of transformation is you don't have to do it alone. You're never alone. And so for me, I knew God has been on my side the whole time, just waiting for me to ask for help. And I sometimes need to be reminded of that now, but I couldn't do everything I do without a community, help keeping me accountable, people that have, helped me every step of the way. So I think it's really important, community, that aspect of it. I mean, look, I'm a coach and I have a coach. I'm invested in a mastermind and I have my own mastermind. I'm a sponsor and I have a sponsee. I think it's important to know that you don't have to do it alone.
Those are amazing, amazing words to live by and to just share with our audience. And, you know, as I'm sitting here listening to your story, I'm reflecting on how likely when you got into your accident, that probably felt like the ultimate low of your life. But the reality is it was the journey and the process that came after mm-hmm. and the struggle that you went through. What I'm super curious to hear about, Amberlee, is how does that, what you went through, the journey you went through, how does that help you on a daily basis today? To allow you to continue to develop into the person you know you're meant to be?
I think that it's important for any time, well, all the time, actually, not just if you're going through a struggle, but to have purpose. And when I got in trouble so after the accident, all these surgeries, I kept trying to go back to fitness training and it was killing me being on my feet like that. And it wasn't until one day that I was bleeding out. Some of my stitches popped open and I was sitting there bleeding out through my medical boot on the gym floor. And my husband was like, what are you doing? You're literally killing yourself. And I was just trying to get through it and trying to And I think that, you know, just realizing that I stopped training and I didn't feel like I had a purpose. And that's what led me to drinking even more. And I think that what I've learned is this has given me such humility. It's given me such compassion for what others are going through when they're in empathy, what they're going, I can empathize when someone's going in pain. And actually I was working with one of my clients who I had, she's passed away now, but I had for over 20 years. And she said, Amberlee, what you've gone through, you're a better coach now because you understand my pain. And so I think it's so important to have purpose and ask yourself these questions. What are you good at? What makes your heart sing? What brings you joy? What would you do if money wasn't an object? And what are some of the things you'd be willing to put up with that are inconvenient or a pain in the butt, you know, but that you would still do because you love doing this thing? And so I really thought about that. And I thought, well, I have always loved working with people. I love seeing people grow. And so that's when I went and got, you know, I had certifications for training, but got certifications to be a life coach. And I thought, sometimes in all transparency, sometimes my husband gets on me because he's like, you're doing too much. Why are you going to all these events and speaking? Like, you don't have to do all this, like, slow down. And I said, but when I have this purpose and I can show up for other people and I can help them transform their life, then I'm not sitting at home dwelling on my pain. I become the victor of my life. And so whatever your purpose is, and you know, your purpose might be that you want to be the best mom and pick your kids up from school and go to the PTA meeting. Your purpose might be that you make a phone call every single day to the people that you love. Whatever your purpose is, when I was stuck in the hospital bed after the accident, I was giving the nurses exercise advice and routines. Even though I was stuck in the hospital bed, I was still making exercise plans for my trainers and for the clients and setting them up with each other, giving nutritional advice. And so I still felt like I had purpose. And that's one of the things, being of service and having that purpose, that inspires me to get up and get out of bed and keep moving every day.
You're absolutely right. You know, and for somebody who's been on my own purpose journey for quite some time now, I've come to the conclusion is that it's the one thing we as humans are meant to find for ourselves in this one precious life that we have, is to discover our purpose and to share it with the world. Because oftentimes it does come from a place of service. It does come from a place of giving back. And, you know, it's a part of you because you're meant to give back to the world in some way. So I completely agree and resonate exactly with what you're saying. One of the things I want to dive into next, Amberlee, is this idea of what we call ownership. And from somebody who so clearly lives in ownership, somebody who's been through the ups and downs of life, somebody who knows what it's like to not only struggle, but experience pain and turn that pain into purpose, as you said, from somebody who's so connected to their purpose, from somebody who's connected to a higher power, to God, right? These are all what we call living in ownership. What would you say in a word or a phrase is your definition of ownership?
Well, I tell you what, when you take complete ownership, no matter what you've done, you've failed, you've messed up, you're what you call flaws or imperfections, nobody can use it against you. And I say that in that I used to have so much shame. And when we shine a light on shame, it's just, we can completely demolish the shame. And I held on to so much shame about being sexually abused as a kid. I had so much shame about the way that I looked, going from being doing fitness videos and being in Shape magazine and fitness modeling to all of a sudden I'm deformed and scarred. And I was like, I will never wear pants. I will never show my scars. I was so embarrassed of how I looked. I actually hated the way I looked. When I started to take ownership of all my imperfections, then little by little, I started to be able to not only just accept them, but start to love myself again. And not only that, you know, I had this one doctor I'll never forget. I was being released from the hospital. I was so excited to be getting to go home. And I said, I can't wait to train clients again. He goes, oh, well, I don't know if you're going to ever work again. And I'm like, well, I can't wait to run again. And he said, well, you'll never run again. He goes, and you'll probably never wear shorts again with all those scars. And so I was like, oh, well, when I was finally able to start to show myself some love and love myself again and take complete ownership in the way that I looked, I was like, oh my gosh, I actually can say out loud, I love my leg and I love the scars, because to me now, it shows me all that I've overcome, all the victories that I've overcome, every single surgery where they were, you know, I had a 1% chance of saving my leg from amputation and they saved it. Like, it's a miracle. And so I've been able to shift my perspective when I took complete ownership in the fact that I had a problem with alcohol. I was able to fix it. Not only that, I can say it out loud and be like, yeah, I'm grateful to be sober. It's given me the life that I have now. And when you like confidently take ownership of who you are, what you've been through, what you look like, it gives other people permission to do the same. And I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me and said, oh my gosh, I had somebody at the gym today come up to me, because I sometimes will wear shorts, but today I was wearing pants and I wear boots to work out because my ankle's fused. And he walks over and he's like, hey, I just wanted to tell you that your nickname in the gym is Boots. I think it's kind of crazy you wear boots in the gym, but your scars are pretty crazy too, but you look really tough. We also have been calling you Sarah Connors from Terminator. And I was like, I just laughed, but because I take complete ownership and like, hey, I have to wear boots to work out in, but my ankle's fused and it allows me to still work out. It's like, he didn't feel sorry for me. He didn't put pity on me. Instead, I got the nickname of Sarah Connors, you know? And so I think taking ownership of who you are allows you to build your confidence. It allows you to step into your power.
I love that. Ownership allows you to step into your power. It's outstanding. It's really, really powerful. Amberly, where can people find you? Where can they go and engage in more of your content and your messaging and just what you're all about?
Oh, well, thank you. You can find everything at amberlylago.com. My book, True Grit and Grace, my podcast, True Grit and Grace, my mastermind, the Unstoppable Life Mastermind, because I feel like we can all be unstoppable and have unstoppable success. And Instagram is Amberly Lago Motivation. That's where I hang out the most. And you can see some of the behind the scenes shenanigans. And I think that's how we connected too.
That and Mr. Dustin LaChance, you and I are talking on his stage coming up here in January. So
I know. You know what? He's not messaged me back, because I'm like, I don't know when I'm speaking, but I don't have it down for January. So I need to, I'm so glad you said that. I've got to reach out to him.
Oh, well, Dustin, when you listen to this, because you were just on, make sure that you reach back to Amber Lee.
Dustin, yes. Oh my gosh. I had emailed him and I know he's a busy man, and I hope, well, we'll see. January. What date is that?
I don't know. I think it's the 24th or something.
Oh yeah. I won't be able to do that. I'm speaking at another event.
Oh boy.
I know. But he's got 4 masterminds coming up.
Yeah. They're, it's like once every couple quarters or something. So
yeah. Yeah. I'm already booked out to speak at an event with John Maxwell, Ed Milet, Randy Garn, Gary Brecka. Do you know any of them?
Oh yeah. Majority.
Yeah. Yeah. They're amazing. They're so much fun. So yeah, I'm doing that. And then I hope I get to meet you in person soon.
Yes, I would love it. I would love it.
But I just want to thank you for your, you know, just having me on your show and your incredible questions. And you guys are amazing. Such an amazing team that you are on the podcast. I would love if my husband did the podcast with me. It only took me 100 episodes of my podcast before I could get him on my show.
Oh, well, we'll have to chat with you here in a second after I wrap this up to
okay.
little couples collective that we've got going on. I've got to talk. I think you'll love it. So guys, as you go forward, we all have these journeys that put us in this potential rock bottom. And when we're there, it can be something that just seems so insurmountable to overcome. But often we feel like it's surmountable to overcome simply because we think we have to do it alone. We think we have to crawl on our own. We think the only person around is ourselves. But if you take radical acceptance for where you are and you are able to ask for help, there is a major difference of the fear of leaning in versus the courage of stepping up and ultimately stepping out and asking for help, because your struggle is somebody else's purpose and their purpose is somebody else's miracle. So make sure that you're able to lean into that. Make sure you're able to go forward and make sure you're able to take that ownership so you can truly step into your power. Because remember, success is different. So own your different. And we'll see you next week.